Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI ordains 14 new priests. We hear of a controversial project that aims to bring clean energy to much of Chile's population, and of a counter-campaign highlighting the environmental and social damage the project would wreak in one of the few remaining unspoilt and wild environments of our planet. And we take a look at the ongoing One Goal Education for All campaign, which is being promoted and supported by the 2010 FIFA World Football Championship. In a solemn ceremony held in St. Peter's Basilica on Sunday, Pope Benedict XVI ordained 14 men to the priesthood for the Diocese of Rome. Hema McCarthy has this report.
Pope Benedict XVI was uncharacteristically late for his midday appointment with pilgrims this Sunday, but with good reason, as he explained in his comments in Italian before the Angelus prayer. Sunday morning, in his role as the Bishop of Rome, he laid his hands upon the heads of 14 men from his diocese during the solemn celebration of the Sacrament of Holy Orders. The 14 men processed up the central aisle of St. Peter's Basilica in simple white chasubles wearing the deacon's stole. 10 of those men were from Rome, one from India, one from Chile, one from Germany, and one, Japan.
Tanaka Hiroto Yoane.
Eccomi.
After each candidate was called and judged worthy before the people of God, Pope Benedict spoke to them about the path of the priestly ministry.
Il sacerdozio, ricordiamolo sempre, si fonda.
Reflecting on the gospel of the day, the story of St. Peter's profession of faith in the Christ of God, the Pope warned against careerism and ambition. He said the priesthood can never be a way to achieve security in life or to gain a position in society. Rather, it must be rooted in conformity to Christ and his total gift of self.
Che aspira al sacerdozio per un accrescimento del proprio prestigio.
He added that those who aspire to the priesthood to enhance personal prestige and power have misunderstood the meaning at the root of this ministry. Those who want above all to achieve personal ambition, achieve personal success, will always be slaves to themselves and public opinion.
Sì, la Chiesa conta su di voi.
In his concluding words to these new priests, Pope Benedict said, "The Church puts much faith and hope in your future. The Church is counting on you. It counts a lot on you."
Upon you and your loved ones at home, I invoke the blessings of Almighty God.
Thanks there to Hema McCarthy for that report. Have you ever been to, or even heard of, Chilean Patagonia? Well, I discovered it's a geographic region containing the southernmost portion of South America. And the Chilean part of Patagonia embraces the southern part of the region of Los Lagos and the regions of Aysén and Magallanes. My friend Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright, who was recently there, told me it's an adventurer's paradise, a land of raging white water, dazzling glaciers and wild animals and fish. So how is it going to look with 5 new dams and a 1,500-mile power line? As I just mentioned, Father Timothy brought me the latest regarding a very controversial project which is shaking the earth in Chilean Patagonia in more ways than one. And by the way, before I begin, all the music in this programme has been especially written and composed for Patagonia Chilena Sin Represas, a campaign for Chilean Patagonia without dams.
I have friends in Chile whom I've known for many years now, and I go there once or twice a year
to be with them, to celebrate with them. And this year they took me, when I was there in April, they took me down to the southern part of Chile, what they call Chilean Patagonia. It's beyond way several thousand kilometers south of Santiago. And there in this wilderness of beauty, of mountains and glaciers, of rough terrain with some small holdings, low population eking its living out of this beautiful but demanding environment. Plenty of water, plenty of ice, a climate similar to that you would get in, say, parts of northern Scotland or in northern part of the Rocky Mountains in the United States or in Scandinavia. Warm in summer, but cold winters. And in this wonderfully beautiful area, they have huge resources of clean water, pure water, either locked up in the ice or in the lakes, estimated to be roughly the third largest source of clear water in the world.
Father Timothy told me that, other than the breathtakingly beautiful nature surrounding him there, the thing that most struck him was the spirituality of the people in Chilean Patagonia, a sense of presence, of being, of what it is to be human in the face of a difficult environment. Patagonia, tierra viva,
immensa naturaleza. And this area is, as I say, is, in historic terms, has only been developed in the last 100 years or so, less probably, and it's therefore prized by its inhabitants. They've developed their own particular culture, their own particular way of relating and coping, which has its own values. And of course, it's an awful long way from the capital of Chile in Santiago. It takes several hours flying to get there. And even once you land, to get into the heartland of it, it's a 5 or 6 hour journey over these rough roads. So into this sort of natural paradise, a paradise of beauty, of the world, of the animals, of the birds, of nature.
But all, Father Timothy told me, is not well.
I was introduced to a project which has been long in gestation and is still not yet finally approved. But it is a project which would destroy this area, this culture, these people. And it's a project, of course, about providing electric power for the future of Chile, most particularly of Santiago. ¿Cuántas veces nos dijeron que era esencial que el agua no se niegue libre, debe circular? The origin of the project goes back to two things. One is the fact that in energy terms, 40% of Chile's energy now comes from fossil fuels, and of course that must change, as it does for the rest of the world. They must move away from the fossil fuels to use renewable resources. And Chile is a country of great length with huge climatic variations, making it possible for solar power, wind power, as well as water power, and as well as for geothermal power. And into this need, of course, it's one of the features of many organizations, is to seek somewhere where there's few people. Few people, vulnerable people, possibly where they are, but nevertheless, in the great scale of things, a very small minority in the total population of Chile.
Some 20 years ago, Father Timothy told me, President Pinochet of Chile privatized the water as part of his campaign to ally the economies of Chile with the capitalist system of the West.
Sadly, this was done in a rather dictatorial way. It was handed over to people without giving an option to the people who were in different parts of the country who would benefit from owning their own water, as, for example, in Patagonia and Chile. Some beautiful rivers there, people who need the water at different times of the year for irrigation, for drinking, but they were never given any option as to whether they might like to buy it. It was handed over to a privatized company. As is the case in our world, of course, any company or any group of people who hold the water rights are holding a very important and valuable resource.
And this was soon spotted by people in Europe, in particular an organization called Endesa Spain. And they, realizing the potential of these water rights, paid a huge sum of money. Later, of course, when this news got out that the Chilean water rights were now owned by Spain, there was, of course, a big response, an angry response from the people of Chile. And these particular people were fined a lot of money, but they've still made a substantial packet of money. This Spanish company, energy company, realizing that there was need to be change in the Chilean energy production, and realizing that for a foreign investor owning the water rights, there would be a good deal of opposition if they were to simply go in there and say, we're going to solve your energy problems. They decided to go into partnership with a Chilean firm, Colbún, based in Santiago, who are not a very big energy company, but nevertheless an important one locally. And together they've formed a company called Hydroaysén with the aim of building 5 huge dams in Patagonian Chile on the Pascua River and the Baca River. And those 5 dams would generate enough electricity using the power of the water, which they would then send by a high-tension wire all the way to Santiago, 1,600 kilometres away, a long wire. The length of that wire just means that you've got to lose some. They claim that the new technologies will lose very little of the power of the electricity between its generation in Patagonia and Chile and its arrival in Santiago to the consumer.
The project, Father Timothy explained, which would take some 15 years to complete, would not only lead to the dislocation of the lifestyle of the people already there, it would also potentially increase the dangers resulting from climatic changes that are affecting parts of Chile.
To do with the global warming and the melting of ice, particularly during the summer months, and the increased water flow and the failure of ice to hold water back and therefore rushing down hills into these river valleys, etc. All of which happen increasingly over the last 10 or 20 years. In other words, the project, although it sounds clever and good on paper, is going to result in huge disruption to a way of life in a distant part of the country, with a transmission line which is going to cross one of the world's most active seismic areas. For example, already, when they originally, several years ago, planned the transmission line, they suddenly found that there'd been a volcano had erupted. So they've had to change the line. And, of course, the recent earthquake in Concepción, Chile, which had huge effects, although they claim they would have survived, the fact is that they can't predict when the next earthquake will be or where the next volcano will erupt. And to have such a high-tension line with 6,000 pylons, each 70 metres high, going across this wonderful, beautiful southern landscapes of Chile, transporting this electricity, is a risk not just to the line itself, but it's a risk to the beauty of the countryside and, of course, its destructive effect on the peoples of Patagonia and Chile. So that is the project they've produced. They've received huge numbers of complaints, which they're trying to deal with. They've had to have an extension. The people down in Patagonia and Chile, vulnerable as they are, of course, powerless when it comes to the might of the government and the might of the industry in Santiago and the demands of the country.
But that is not the end of the story. Father Timothy told me of a further disturbing development.
That project is now not Spain and Colbún, because Enel, the Italian generating company, saw that Spanish Endesa was in trouble, so they bought the water rights and the 51% in the Hydroaysén project from the Spanish Endesa. And so it's now owned by the Italians. Now, The difficulty with this project is that the nearer you get to the region, the more you realise how crazy the thing seems to be. The further away you stand from it, the more they say, oh, it's totally logical, it's costing a lot of money, and this is the only way to solve Chile's energy problems by 2025. Luckily, in this case, among the objectors, there are some serious experts in the possibilities of alternative technology. And they produced a document, a very well-researched document, called Are the Dams Necessary in Patagonia? And their view is that this massive project, scarring the whole countryside and disrupting the lifestyle, is just not necessary. It's too big, too expensive, too risky. And the alternative is to develop, as they say, a lot of projects which are already there, make existing dams and existing energy production non-carbon-related, that is, more efficient, extending measures to produce wind power, to use solar power, and to get into geothermal power, all of which are there in abundance. And, of course, more local to the centres of consumption.
This document has been submitted, and the present position is that the project is being delayed, probably because of the recent earthquake and the huge amount of repair and reconstruction that is having to go on. But Father Timothy points out, sooner or later, the government is going to have to pronounce.
So this is a very difficult but a very important project that has to be stopped. I spoke with the bishop down there and many people who are working with him, and he is in total agreement that this is not the way forward for energy for Chile. But there are powerful influences in government in Santiago and in industry and in the banks who see this as a good investment, a way forward for clean energy for Chile, and ultimately will make a lot of money for those companies.
Of course, Father Timothy says, they can only say that on the assumption that they are going to have 25, 30 years of non-seismic activity in the region.
But it is my judgment that the people of Aysén, the people whose culture is endangered by this development, and their own way of trying to develop themselves in ways that is sympathetic to their environment, to enable them to raise their standard of living, but to keep their culture, to preserve this unique area of the world, and particularly its pure water resources, and their total opposition to it, and the fact that there is an alternative, suggests to me that this is a capitalist venture backed by big money, seeing big money result from it, which could end up as a disaster. So I offer this as an opportunity for people to think, to reflect, to recognise that perhaps they may be able to do something to stop it.
So for anyone who wants to see and learn more, there are websites created by all parties concerned, including the one by the Patagonian Foundation, which endeavours to protect and preserve the Patagonian culture and environment by promoting economic, social and environmental sustainability. And within the interest of all concerned, the Foundation forms cooperative partnerships with individuals and regional, national and international organisations to develop and implement programmes that will promote sustainable and responsible economic growth, maintain quality of life, and preserve and permanently protect Patagonia's vast land and diverse ecosystems. All this also to make sure that Patagonia is globally recognised and preserved as one of the few remaining unspoilt and wild environments on our planet. Desesperados cantos de ballenas. Just like hundreds of thousands, millions of people probably, around the world, I too watched the inauguration concert that kicked off the 2010 World Football Championships in South Africa. And the one thing that most stood out, I thought, was the campaign being promoted called One Goal, Education for All. Now, more than 1 week into the tournament, maybe the team you're rooting for isn't doing exactly what you had hoped it to do. But the One Goal campaign's aim has certainly not lost momentum. I decided to look into exactly what it entails and spoke to the media director at Join One Goal, Sam Barrett. Your campaign has received some cracking publicity at the inauguration of the football event in South Africa. I was watching the event on television and it was regularly interspersed by some very well done clips advertising One Goal, Education for All. Have you had a good return from that?
I think we've had an amazing return. The concert has really set up the campaign for the period of the World Cup with the president of FIFA, Sepp Blatter, designating One Goal as the main legacy for the whole of this tournament. At the moment, we're still getting thousands and thousands of people coming in, joining us on Facebook, on Twitter, signing up to our website on www.joinonegoal.org. And really, the momentum that we now have is extraordinary. And we've got other ambassadors coming in this week with George Weah, JJ Okocha, and other guys that are coming in to back the campaign, so that ahead of the political summit on the 7th of July, we should be in really good shape with heads of state and others feeling the pressure to invest more money in education.
So you're really seizing the power of football to get the message across, aren't you?
That's right. I mean, I don't think football's ever before thought of the social good it could deliver to the world. I think it does some excellent projects at a grassroots level. I think many of the league clubs do great work within the community. But I think this World Cup in Africa is an opportunity for football to rethink about itself and how it can leave a real difference for others around the world. And education, which many players either kind of fast-track in their pursuit of joining clubs, is an obvious cause for football to kind of back. So I think we've been very lucky and very privileged to have Sepp Blatter back in the campaign. But we've also got some massive ambassadors such as Zinedine Zidane, Michael Essien, Pelé, and others coming out to show the support for One Goal, which is great.
Can we take a step back and just talk a little bit about the One Goal campaign? When and why did it originate?
The One Goal campaign originated 2 years ago. It's come out of the Global Campaign for Education, which is a coalition of NGOs that have been working to try and increase funding for education over many years. The aim of the campaign is to try and increase funding from developing countries for more money for aid, but developing countries to increase their national budget to 20% of all that they spend on education in order to get all children into school. So the reason this campaign has come about is because I think people were very keen for there to be something that would be bigger and different off the back of this World Cup. And we've been supported by some fantastic co-chairs in Queen Rania of Jordan, also Archbishop Desmond Tutu and now Sepp Blatter. It really helped to push the campaign. It really is perceived as the major kind of project to emerge off the back of the World Cup, which we're very, very lucky to be in that position to have.
I read on your webpage that some 72 million children in the world are denied the chance to go to school. That's a very sobering statistic.
It is. I mean, I think many people will be listening to the show, will think of their education and just think that it's just part of everyday life. It's what everybody does. Going to school in the morning, coming back at the end of the afternoon is the rite of passage that all of us kind of go through, and it sets us up for our careers and our future life. But for many children around the world, it's a privilege. And so I think there's a great travesty in places like Nigeria, where 1 in 10 of the world's children do not go to school. This is something that we think has to change. I mean, in 2010, the thought that something like 72 million children do not go to school is a massive injustice. There's been great progress over the past few years with 40 million new children getting into school, so there is a success story in this. But what we're looking for the World Cup to provide is a platform to push it that little bit harder and that little bit further.
Your motto is education beats poverty, right?
That's right. I mean, I've travelled all over Africa and spent a lot of time living in Ethiopia, a lot of time visiting Kenya, Uganda, Mali, Senegal. And whenever I go to a school, I'm just really shocked by the determination that many of the children have and the opportunity that particularly girls grab with both hands. Education not only gives people new opportunities, but it also deals with issues such as prevalence of HIV, ensures that girls are better informed about what their rights are, and it really is the motor through which we can power our way out of some huge issues of chronic poverty in parts of the world. So we're putting a lot of energy into Nigeria, a lot of energy into other countries such as Congo and Niger, to try and turn it around so that every child goes to school.
I think it's a great campaign that you invite everyone to join and help make education for all a reality. How does that work, and what is it exactly that you're asking the individual to do?
We've got now 3 weeks until this World Education Summit that takes place on the 7th of July in Cape Town. What we'd like people to do is to show their support for the campaign and call on their leaders to attend, but also to think about what they can do to make a difference. So we know that the US, the French, the Germans, the Italians, the Brits and the Japanese governments are all very big players ensuring that more money is spent on education. So we'd love people to show their support for the campaign by going to the website www.joinonegoals. In many countries, we've got mobile campaigns with text messages going out to some 1.5 billion people over the course of the tournament. And we'd also love people to get onto Facebook and Twitter and show their support for the campaign. So anything that listeners listening to this today can do to help us would make a huge difference to trying to get the leaders to come in with the right promises and the right packages in their back pockets at this summit in 3 weeks' time.
I was going to ask you, would you like to make an appeal to Vatican Radio listeners?
Vatican Radio has always been incredibly supportive of causes ranging from dropping the debt to changing the rules of trade to supporting humanitarian campaigns during crises. So anything that listeners from Vatican Radio can do to support One Goal would be very much appreciated.
That was Sam Barrett, Media Director at Join One Goal. That's all from the English Feature Programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at the same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.